All right, you beautiful weirdos. We are having a park edition of Pacific Noise Weird. I am here with Marisa. Sorry, I've only read your name, not said it out loud so far. And we're here in what park is this?
Pandora Park.
Pandora Park over in East Hastings. So, let's turn it to you.
Hello. Thanks for having me, and thanks for meeting next to the dog park so we can watch the dogs frolic.
It's well worth it. It's important to spend your time around animals and enjoy the outside. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
So I am an audio engineer. I split my time between doing front of house at venues, mostly Redgate Art Society, doing live sound. And then I spend the rest of my time working at Rain City Recorders, recording bands, and also assisting the head engineer there, Jesse Gander.
Yeah, we had Jesse Gander on the show just a couple weeks ago. Let me hear a little bit more about what you do at Redgate, because I've had a couple of the bands who've recorded there on the show before, and I'm sure the audience would love to hear a little bit more.
Yeah, so Redgate, Redgate's a nonprofit art society, and we've put on shows for the past, on and off, 15, 17 years. I got involved at Redgate back in 2014, back when we were on Hastings and Hawks. We're now at Main and Third. And when I first started Redgate, we didn't really have much of a sound system or anything. There was a couple mics, and we had more broken speakers than working ones. We had some cool shows, though. Like, it was all about the energy. But then I was about 18, and I just walked in the door, and I was like, can I do sound here? And they're like, sure, why not? No one else wants to. And I started doing sound, and that was the first time I had done live sound outside of, like, you know, my friends' high school shows we do in the suburbs or whatever in my high school. So I really got like thrown headfirst into the Vancouver music scene in a way that I didn't really know still existed. Like, I'd been working in studios for about 3 years at the time, but being underage in Vancouver, there wasn't really a lot of all ages spaces, much less an all ages space that would let you work the shows. So for me, like, I always thought that, like, whole idea of DIY venue, like punk venue, was extinct. I didn't think that it existed anymore. I had read about it, like, my whole teenage years, but I was like, yeah, we have, like, the Commodore and the Vogue, and we got Lana Lewis, and I can go there, like, if I, like, sneak in. But, you know, there's a real DIY venues in Vancouver anymore, and I gotta start working at one, and gotta start, like, just, you know, with such a small setup or such a lack thereof setup, it was really nice to kind of, like, as my skills progress, kind of go to the collective and be like, hey, like, I think it'd be really cool if we got the speakers repaired, or I think we should try to buy some more microphones so I can actually try to mic up the drums as well as the vocals, and then also let's buy some more microphones so I can mic up the amps, and let's build a stage, and, you know, 8 years later, here we are, and we actually have a really nice audio setup. I think I'm really happy with the way that Redgate's progressed in a technical aspect. You know, it's made it so we can actually facilitate events that make it worth it for touring bands to come out. We can facilitate bigger bands. We can give people who it's their first show, we can give them, like, a real show experience without feeling like they're in a club, you know? So my main job at Redgate is obviously handling all the tech things. I've recently, the last couple years, done the booking as well. But it's just, my role there, I feel like, is just making sure that we have the most professional audio setup so we don't have to be, like, you know, a venue or a club in any other aspect, you know? Like, I want it to feel DIY, and it's, you know, a collective, so everybody else wants the DIY feel, but I feel like it's really nice to experience a DIY punk show or an all-ages, you know, rock show. It's so windy.
It's really windy out today, which is nice because it's hot.
Yeah. By, like, experiencing that, not having to sacrifice fidelity, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, what my main role at Redgate is, at least to me. I mean, you could say, like, you could say I do a lot of other things there, but that's what I like to think that I do.
Well, having had a couple of bands who've recorded at Redgate on the show before, I can definitely tell you're doing a good job out there. Like, the audio quality for those clips were, like, perfect, radio ready, no editing required, just good to go.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
And honestly, I'd love to have, like, Redgate on the show. Like, in general, I'd like to do recordings there for y'all. That's a little, like, teaser for your audience out there, just in case this comes up. I want to put it out there, though.
I'm intrigued.
We'll just come on down and, like, record a show and then put that directly onto the radio.
Yeah.
Because, like, heck, DIY.
Yeah.
Collaboration. All right. Tell me a little bit about how you got into music in the first place. Like, at all, you mentioned a high school band.
So
let's embarrass you live on radio, eh?
I was very young, obviously. I looked a lot younger than I was. I am cursed with back then being the 16-year-old that looked about 14, or generously, more like 12. And I was a horrible student, surprisingly. I went to school in the suburbs in North Burnaby, and I had this really cool teacher, which my teenage self is just like, how could you be saying this right now? But I did. This guy, Kevin Ault, he ran this digital sound production class, and it was like, yeah, it was really cool. He had just started it. It was the second year, and he couldn't get any girls to join it. And he was like, listen, if I can't get any girls to join, the class is going to get cut. And mind you, this is back in, like, 2010. And he was like, I know you don't play music, but you're a punk. So if you come to my class, if you stop flipping off your teachers, and if you stop smoking weed and stop doing all these things during school hours, I'll give you a really cool work placement and I'll make sure you graduate. And I was like, whatever. And he's like, I think you'd be a really cool music engineer if you looked into it. So I went home and I Googled it. I was like, oh, that seems really, really cool. So I went back to the class. I was like, okay, I'll stop flipping off the teachers, and I'll come to your class. I won't go to the other classes, but I'll come to this class, and you'll give me this placement. And he sent me to the Hive recording studios, which, yeah, it was a recording studio out in Burnaby at the time, ran by Colin Stewart and Jesse Gander. And I went there when I was 16, I can't remember now. And just as an intern, and, you know, I was, like, scrubbing the toilets and learning how to wrap cables and things, and those guys really liked me. And the second I went there, like, I just felt really accepted for the first time in my life, and I felt really, just really like I had a future, which I never really thought of before. Like, I didn't really think of anything past, you know, rent the next month. And to have, like, all these people who were at least 10, 20 years my senior accepting me with, like, such open arms and, like, being like, if you want to learn this, like, we will teach you, was just, like, it felt like a dream in some ways. And they hit up my teacher and they're like, this kid is awesome. Like, if she wants to keep coming back, like, tell her she can bring her schoolwork here. We'll teach her everything she wants to know and she can hang out for as long as she wants. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I worked with Jesse and I worked with Colin for pretty much every single day for 2 years straight until the Hive moved back to Saanich with Colin. And those guys, they introduced me to... I worked with all the bands with them. They taught me everything. Colin taught me how to solder everything. I actually went when he moved to Saanich. I stayed at his house with his wife, Catherine, for 2 weeks and wired up his entire studio for him. And Jesse introduced me to Live Sound Techs that started teaching me how to do live sound. And ever since then, it's just been every job I've gotten, every opportunity I've gotten, and every exciting thing I've been able to do has stemmed from just starting, walking in the doors there back in 2011, which is bonkers to think about. Sometimes I still feel like I'm like 16, but I'm just like cooler or better or probably less cool, but more equipped. And it's hard for me sometimes to remember that, like, wait, no, I'm in my late 20s now, and this is, like, my career. This isn't just, like, some dream that I am holding on to until I f*** it up. Like, sorry, can I swear? Okay.
A little swear.
That's my
as
one.
A treat.
As a treat. I deserve a little swearing as a treat. But, yeah, that's pretty much, like, how I got my start. I loved punk rock music. Okay, to be fair, people who know me, I love pop punk music.
Who doesn't, though?
Right? It's, Green Day.
Like, pop punk is good for a reason. Like,
it's tasty like bubblegum.
Exactly.
So I loved that music, and I would sit at home and I would research, like, live performance, like, Green Day 1992 or, you know, like Lollapalooza or, and I would just, you know, I couldn't afford to go to the big concerts, and that's all I thought that there was. And I, you know, Vancouver, as everybody knows, is like, it's got such an amazing thriving scene, but if you don't know about it, it flies under the radar. Like, you can't find it, especially as a 14-year-old in the suburbs. So when I started to, like just having this whole life of wanting to be in this music scene that I thought that I missed out on, I was obviously very angsty because also I was 14. And then, you know, like, finding out about it and then being accepted into it and then being like, oh my God, I can actually help the bands. I can actually do something to help music be created and then spend my life in music. Like, why would I not dedicate every waking hour to that? And it's kind of just been like that the past 11, 10, 12 years.
More than a decade at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So proper professional.
I mean, that's not my call to make.
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Yeah, I am much the same. I always wanted to be on the radio. Like, it was my childhood dream. As soon as I realized, like, as soon as I got old enough to realize that radio was made by people and not, like, the actual box.
Oh, yeah, got little robots in the box.
Yeah, it's just coming out of the box. It's not a person, because I was, like, what, three?
Yeah.
I'm dumb. I was three. But as soon as I realized that, I was like, oh, I really want to be on the radio. And then as soon as I got old enough to realize that, like, jobs were a thing, I was like, oh, they're not hiring at the radio. It's never going to happen. I'm just going to shelve that dream and cry about it. Because, you know, teenager, angst.
Yep. You got to have something to cry about, even if you got to make it up.
You find something in the end.
Always.
Tell me a little bit about, like, your favorite bands. What was the biggest influence on you?
I mean, before the studio, I'd say, like, my biggest band, Green Day, like, 100%. Those guys, they started when they were young teenagers. They toured with people who are older than them. They worked really hard as young kids to be accepted into the punk scene. And the fact that, you know, the scene that they came up in, the Gilman Street scene, was a lot older than them and a lot... like quotation marks punker than them. They had to fight really hard, you know, just to be accepted, like when they were known as Sweet Children, before they were even Green Day. And it was just that snot nose, like, yeah, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere and I don't even care what these people think. Really obviously spoke to a snot nose bratty pop punk kid in the suburbs. And also, I was, you know, I was 10 when American Idiot came out, and, you know, that's when you first start feeling angsty, and, you know, them singing about, like, St. Jimmy, like, leaving the suburbs, and then in 2011 when they released 21st Century Breakdown, and, you know, that album is about the class of 2013. I was the class of 2013, and that was the first time I was ever like, oh, man. They wrote a song about, like, my class. I think I have to actually, like, graduate now, you know? And just, you know, the other bands of that era, like, I loved Blink-182, I loved Sum 41, I loved Operation Ivy, I loved Joan Jett, I loved Bad Brains, I loved, I didn't know too much about the Vancouver music scene at that time. All I really knew about, as far as, like, Vancouver bands or Vancouver adjacent bands was Gob, which is one of my all-time favorite bands as well, and DOA, and, my mom, she painted a funny picture of the Vancouver music scene, because she was never a punk, but she was in the scene back in, like, the 70s and 80s, so when I thought of Vancouver music back when I was a kid, I always thought of, like, Supertramp and Bryan Adams and, you know, like, bands like that, like, mom rock bands. Those bands really, like, they opened me up into other bands. And then once I started working at the studio at The Hive, you know, the first couple bands I met, I still listen to that, and it feels like listening to, like, my most formative memories. So, like, bands like Ladyhawk, they were one of the first bands I met. And it was so sweet because they were in the studio, and in walks this, you know, 15-year-old kid. First thing the drummer does is, let me see your iPod, kid. And he just gave me their entire discography and a whole bunch of other records that they thought I might like No Means No and Fugazi. And I never listened to Radiohead at the time either. So they're like, you got to listen to Radiohead. And Colin was like, you go home and you listen to OK Computer and you come back and tell me what you think. And then with Jesse, I met like White Lung and the Pack AD and Japan Droids. And, you know, those guys sounded like bands I listened to on the radio. I was like, whoa, I can't believe, like, you guys are just people and you're nice. Like, we're just hanging out, like, eating, like, frozen pizzas, and I'm making you coffee and, you know, just making a record. So those bands are really, like, when I think back to, like, my first month at the studio, those are the bands I really think of. And in a way, it feels like when I was, like, 10 years old, flipping through the radio for the first time. Just, like, how much of a concrete memory it was, like, walking in and seeing those bands for the first time. And then it starts speeding up, and, like, band after band after band after band. And I could name hundreds and hundreds of bands that I got to meet in those first 2 years. That just also added to that really solid concrete foundation. There wasn't a single time that I felt like I wasn't accepted to be there. And who knows, like, maybe everybody was as friendly as I remember them being, or maybe it was Colin and Jesse, like, set it, paving the way for those bands to treat me with respect because they respected me so much. But either way, I don't have a single negative memory of those first 2 years, so every band I think of is just everything I could have dreamed of and more. That was a bit of a tangent. I got distracted. There's a really cute dog that just walked by. So.
It's a good tangent. This is what we're here to hear. It's what we're here to hear about.
Yeah, you got the splice tool, right?
Yeah. I got Audacity. I can make it work.
Okay, sick.
But to kind of continue off of this, I want to know what these bands influenced on what you would think is your sound. Like, what is your influence? What is the thing that you focus on as an engineer?
So the sound I have in live sound and the sound I have in the studio are, funnily enough, like I've realized, pretty compartmentalized. With live sound, it's pretty simple. Like, the first thing I was taught when I was, you know, 15 learning live sound was the vocals are the baby in the bathwater. If you, like, as long as you can hear the vocals, you're gonna be okay. But then I started getting complaints when I was, you know, like 16, 17 about, sounds like karaoke. These vocals are too loud. So for me, it's like, I want to be able to stand in the middle of a crowded room at a show, and if I focus in on any instrument, I can hear crystal clear. I just want to be able to hear everything as big and as loud and as clear, and with that, make sure that the bands hear that as well on stage, because the more that you can kind of make people forget that they're listening to something being replicated, the more that they experience the music for what it is, the art for what it is, and the more that the bands have this freedom to kind of forget that they're performing and forget that they're on a stage with microphones and forget that they're in the studio with headphones on, and their art just comes out, and they feel that freedom to feel like they're in their bedroom or their garage or their jam space by themselves creating music. Like, and that does kind of, I guess, bleed into my studio sound, which is, obviously you want it to sound bigger than real life, and you want it to sound clearer than real life, and you want it to sound, like it didn't have to go through a bunch of things to get there. Like, it didn't have to go through a microphone to a mic cable to a compressor to an EQ to a DAW and then press to a record. You just, for me, when I was a young kid, I would close my eyes, I'd listen to music, and it felt like the band or the artist was performing around me. And now when I'm in the studio or if I'm at a show, I want that too. Like, I want to be a conduit for people's art, and I want to be able to give people the confidence and have them have the faith in me to know that I got their back enough that they don't need to worry about it. They don't need to worry about what's being outputted, because my promise to them is that I will try to understand what you're trying to output as much as possible and have that is clear to the listener. It's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a little delusion, you know, like, if you realize that you're making art, are you really making art mm-hmm. anymore? So I want to take that away. Like, I want when I make headphone mixes in the studio, I don't want it to sound to those musicians like they're hearing their music played back through headphones. I want them to forget that I'm there. Mm-hmm. I want them to feel safe because I'm watching and I'm making sure that those are getting laid down and nothing bad is going on, but I don't want them to think about me when they're performing. A shout out afterwards, like, hey, thanks for that, I appreciate, but like, while they're doing their art, I don't exist. All I do is I do the magic to make it what is in their head come out and be inputted into other people's heads, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It makes complete sense. Because, as someone who makes art, if I start thinking about making art too much, then I stop making art. Like, I just block immediately.
Exactly. And when you start thinking about you are performing right now, or you are recording right now, especially, like, a lot of the recording sessions that I do myself these days are for young musicians and people have never done a studio experience, and if they have, like, they've never done, like, Rain City is a really nice recording studio, and it can be really intimidating for a musician in their early 20s who has only ever recorded a jam space to walk in and see all this nice gear and this big room, and all of a sudden they're by themselves in this big room, and, you know, they freeze up, and it's scary, like, it's intimidating, but, like, I feel like a sort of a niche I'm getting into is being that person to show them that we're just gonna set up, you are here to do your art, and you deserve to be here, just like, I don't know, I guess how people were to me, like, because you are here, you deserve to be here, and this is big, and this is a big step from, like, what you've come from, or, like, what you've done, but this is, like, what your next step needs to be, like, your foot was already going there, I'm just making sure you land the step, kind of thing.
Absolutely. You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siam, Nisiyam,
Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
Like, that's a huge part of the punk scene for me, too, is, like, that ethos of acceptance and like, bettering yourselves and bettering each other in the name of good music.
Exactly. Music, music seeps into the cracks that we all have within us and glues us together in a way that we want to be glued, but we don't know how, right? Like, when you're at a show for a band that you really like, and you see someone that you're like, you look kind of cool, but I have no idea how to go up to you and talk to you, you already know you have a common ground with that person. Mm-hmm. And art in general, like, I love multimedia shows, like shows where there's music and an art show and, you know, maybe an installation, like a live thing, and I don't know, maybe even karaoke or stick and poke tattoos, I don't know, like, but multimedia art, because it just is this excitement, this like the atoms between the atoms that don't actually exist in a physical sense, but make our physical existence make sense to us. I don't know, that's getting really, really, like,
esoteric?
Yeah, I sound like I smoked, like, two joints before I came here saying that. But, you know, it's kind of true if you take it with a grain of salt.
It was just one joint.
Yeah.
No, but I get it, because experiencing art, not just as, like, sound, but also tactile and visual, that defines us as humans, other than being able to throw things.
Yeah. And catch things.
And hopefully. Catch things. I mean,
or dodge things.
I don't know very many people who can catch things, but that's what happens when you hang out with nothing but queers.
Yeah. I tried to throw a volleyball at someone the other day, like, angrily, and I missed by, like, 6 feet. It was really embarrassing.
So you would fit in my friend group perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah, totally. We're already, like, tight.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
But yeah, to get back to it, the entire experience of art, not just like one piece of art, but everything that we can experience, everything that has driven us forwards and has since, like, we were cavemen, to fucking put a ancient term on it, but anyway, it's just nice to be able to experience it all at once and all in one place and have that community associated with that, like, experience.
Experiencing art together, as we've learned over the past couple years of not being able to experience art together, is so integral to existence in itself. It's amazing to experience art by yourself. It really helps you look introspectively to yourself without feeling like you should be or shouldn't be. Like, the art that you like is something that you don't, there is no right or wrong. So you get to learn yourself through art, and that's amazing. But the other experience of experiencing art through a group of people, that's what makes community. You know, like, there's a lot of reasons in our lives why we've been in the same room with the same people day after day. And you realize a lot of the times that when you take that reason away, you actually don't have anybody. And that is a really sad realization that a lot of people realize in their lives, you know, from school or from work or even from living in a house with people. But when you experience art together, it doesn't matter where you're physically standing, and it doesn't matter when that part leaves or when that performance is over, that connection is still there. And it's one of the only things I can think about that the connection will come and the connection won't dissipate. You never lose that, and it never diminishes over time. You know, it's something that, it's indescribable. You know, like, people sit and talk and write so many songs, and it's this understanding that it's something that's so powerful and so beautiful. And just, you know, I was working a show last night, and it was, The Crybabies, which is, one of the performers from Cub, which is like an old school Vancouver band that was really cool. And it was just her and her husband, and they're doing an acoustic set, and they sang "You Are My Sunshine" as a closer. And I was like, oh my god, this is so cheesy and corny. But then I looked around the room, and it was a Tuesday night, and there was 120 people there, and everybody was singing the song. And they had a slideshow of all their past, like, 30 years of travel together. And there's a little chihuahua getting a bath in the Ukraine or something from one of the places they traveled. And I started tearing up, and I was like, okay, this might be corny. This might be really cheesy, but this is still really beautiful. Like, and the one performer, he was using a plastic suitcase as a drum, playing a kazoo and singing 4 feet away from the microphone, but he just kept saying, this is love, this room is love, this night is love, everything about what is happening in here is love, and I love it. And I was just like, okay, yeah, like, that is, I mean, we could use so many different words and so much time to try to describe, like, that feeling, but it's really simple. Like, love is indescribable, art is indescribable, and it's what bonds us together.
Yeah, the premise of this show is to bring all the weirdest sounds of the Pacific Northwest that define the sound of the Pacific Northwest and give everyone a chance to be together in that sound and to find each other in the weirdest noise that you can find in this place, because this is our place and those are our sounds and we wouldn't be here without them.
Absolutely not, yeah. I mean, if... It's so interesting because the sound of the Pacific Northwest is so vast. Like, musically speaking, you know, there's a scene of every genre in the Pacific Northwest. And even genres like, I don't even know exist yet, you know? Like, who knows? There's always something new happening. But there's, with the Pacific Northwest also having so much space between communities and so much, like, we were talking before you started hitting record that, you know, like, we both grew up in the forest, you know, like, going to the forest and being amongst the trees, and with all that space and all that lush, like, beautiful earth between that space, it's interesting how cohesive the Pacific Northwest sounds, considering how much, like, geographical space there is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely grew up pretty far away from all of my friends and all of the music scene in Victoria. I'm from Langford, for those who don't know. It's like a middle-of-the-nowhere community northwest of Victoria. And when I managed to get into town, or when a concert occasionally happened in my home, all of us would come together and we would all know each other, even if we didn't, like, we'd never met before. We all knew what we were about. We all knew what being there was about. My first ever concert was with the Cancer Bats.
Oh, amazing.
They came to my middle school. And I managed to sneak... It was an all-ages show, but I managed to get in for free because I was at that middle school. So, that, like, I just knew how to get into the school without using doors. But it was, like, the first time I ever got to be in a mosh pit. And... like, I instinctively knew how to mosh. It was just, like, it's such a part of being a punk and being a punk from that area.
It's like watching a duckling swim for the first time.
Exactly. I picked someone up by their belt and the scuff of their shirt and threw them head first into the crowd. It was a beautiful moment. I got the best hug afterwards.
Oh, yeah, so many hugs. I've never hugged so many strangers as I have in mosh pits. It's, you feel like you're just... I don't know, maybe for the people who play sports, that's how it feels when you win the championship game, but we had only known each other for about 5 minutes previously, like, which is a beautiful thing. The way, like, growing up isolated, like, I moved around a lot as a kid. Like, I've lived so many places. We would move every, you know, 4 months to a year growing up, and... one thing that I found so familiar no matter where we went was going back to the trees, you know, like no matter where I had to live, the places were always different and the people were always different, but the trees, no matter where we went, it was always the same kind of trees. And I could always go to the trees and I could touch the trees and it would be some sense of familiarity. And it's the same thing when I hear music, and you can hear that that is Pacific Northwest music, because it's so familiar, and it doesn't matter where you are in your life, and it doesn't matter where you are geographically, it doesn't matter if you're by yourself or with your friends watching them live, there is that sense of home in that sound. Just like, you know, smelling the Douglas firs kind of thing. Which is a beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Since recently moving to Vancouver, one of the things that I have been missing from home was bedrock. Everything around my childhood home was like on a cliff or next to a cliff, at the bottom of a cliff, just bedrock everywhere. It was all basalt too. And Vancouver doesn't have very much bedrock just around. So I went out to Lighthouse Park in West Van, and I just clambered around on the rocks for like hours, just touching the rock and feeling at home. And it made me think of the music of my home, like thinking of bands that I would listen to live in Victoria, like Future Star. Love Future Star. Yeah. So we'll talk about that in a second. But it was just like the feeling of having bedrock under my feet and hands was the same as listening to music from where I'm from.
Yeah, it definitely, it's this tactile thing. I think that goes back to the feeling of love and acceptance, is when you, our environment is so much a part of us, and when you are in the music scene in these parts of the world, like, it's not just the scene you're in, it is who you are, like, 100%. That the community and the music is just as much in our DNA as like the dandruff off my hair.
You heard it here first, folks. Music is dandruff.
100%, and I love it.
Okay, Can you tell me a little bit about, like, your future goals for your career? Like, tell me what you want to do.
So I recently went on tour for the very first time with a band. I was so lucky to be asked to do sound for the PAC AD through Europe. And I never left Canada before. I'd never been on a plane before. I'd been on a Cessna. But that's not the same as a big old airplane. I learned very quickly. And that really, really changed my trajectory a little bit. I mean, not really, but I have, like, aspects of my career. I love teaching people. I got taught so nicely and so compassionately that I definitely always want to be teaching young people how to do what they want to do. I love Redgate. And I want Redgate, I feel like, at this point, is more than just a singular venue. I feel like Redgate should be around longer than any of the people that are involved right now are. I love recording bands, and I feel like every recording I do, I just get better, you know? So my next, like, 10 years, I want to go on tour with any band that will take me. I want to record as many bands that want to come into the studio, especially the ones that are afraid to record. I want to record them. I want to be that engineer that is known not just for my sounds and not just for being professional, but for also facilitating a warm environment to be able to express art without anxiety. As much as possible, and I want to help the live Vancouver music scene have really good, fun punk ethos with really high fidelity shows. My dream would be every single punk venue in Vancouver has a professional PA system with a trained technician and a mic kit and a recording system, and every single show, no matter how gritty and nasty it is, I don't care if it's a crust punk band or a harsh noise band or a 12-piece pop band, I want them all to sound huge and clear and in the dingiest of rooms. But the one thing, and this has been my goal since we've started doing shows, after the last couple of years of not being able to do it, if I have one legacy in this world, I want to kill punk time.
Ta-ta.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again.
Please elaborate. Go on.
I don't like punk time. I don't like it. I don't like that, you know, the poster says doors 8, show 9, and you show up at 8:15 and the venue isn't open yet and the show doesn't start till 10. And I am, if people have noticed that if I'm behind the board, the show is starting on time, that is deliberate. The show should start. Doors should be standardized. Doors 8, show 9, bands over 12:30. We can have a dance party. We can have karaoke. We can do whatever from 1 a.m. till 3 a.m. or from midnight to 2. I don't care. Or we could all just go home after. But this whole, like, punk time thing, it's over. There's nothing punk rock about being late.
We all got places to be. We got things to do. Some of us have got bedtimes that make it so we can't go to shows anymore.
Zach.
Cough. Cough, cough. My bedtime is 10.
Oh.
So I haven't been to a show in a hot minute.
See, like, we could start doing weekday shows that end by 10, 6 to 10. There's no reason it can't happen. People just got to show up for it.
I'd be there in a heartbeat if I could get back to... I mean, I got to go to live shows at Catalano, and it was like finding a limb that fell off. Just an experience I don't know how to describe. But if I could start going to, like, shows at the Red Gate, I'd be there, 100%.
Daytime shows, why not?
I mean, like, maybe not a, like, 1 p.m. show on a Tuesday, but, like, also, why not a 1 p.m. show on a Tuesday?
Right? A lot of us don't have 9-to-5s. Or we could do, like, a 3 p.m. show on a Sunday.
Yeah. The granny show.
Yeah, we could make some pancakes.
I would love to go to a concert that has pancakes served hot and fresh.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't eat food at places anymore, but, like, imagine going there and having the smell of pancakes.
Right, sir?
Right before... We're workshopping.
Yeah, there's a lot in the works for the next 5 to 10 years of the Vancouver music scene.
Yeah, we called punk time island time on the island.
Yep.
But it turns out this is universal.
Oh, yeah. Island time. But the thing is, you get island time compounded with punk time.
Yes.
It's even worse.
I definitely had some of my punk friends show up 5 hours late to a hangout.
And they're like, hey, sorry we're early.
This is your house.
Yeah, but see, they don't lock their doors on the island, so it's okay.
They don't. I just, like, knock. I'm like, they better be here. I know they were just asleep. Go inside. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're gone. They're long gone. 3 o'clock rolls around. They roll up. I'm like, no.
Hey, bud.
No more punk time. Cut it out.
Yeah, let's make everybody feel like they're welcome. Let's make all the shows sound like they have hot, professional sound. And let's kill punk time. Those are my 3 goals. Oh, also, take me on tour, please.
I mean, yeah. Tell me about your tour. Tell me how that went.
Oh, my tour was absolutely amazing. I've known the Pack AD since I was 15, 16, and going to Europe, oh my god, it was just, it was amazing, the hospitality over there, all the meal, like, we got given dinner every night, free drinks every night, accommodation most nights, but it was just so amazing to go to a different venue in a different city halfway across the world every single night, and see this, like, for lack of a better term, the same people, you know? Like, there was this one venue in Hamburg, or not Hamburg, Dortmund, called the Sub Rosa, and it was like the German Redgate. And I swear, I don't know if anybody listening knows Jim at Redgate, but I met the German Jim, and his name was Constantine, and it was uncanny. Behaviors, like the way they held their body, the way they had a conversation, the way that they were so excited about their new live streaming setup, and how he spent like 15 minutes taking the red floodlight and the blue floodlight to make purple on Becky's face. It was like talking to Jim. But also, it was just the thing that was really nice or really interesting was how much of my job wasn't even mixing, per se, but advocating for the band. Mm-hmm. You know, like, sometimes you walk into a venue and they don't have the technical needs that the band needs to do their show. They might not have a working stage monitor. They might not allow the band to play as loud as they normally do. The show might be running late. And just being that person to advocate for that band made me feel quite good, because as a band, you know, they have so much on their plate, and also they have to play like the best set ever every single night after night, even if they'd just done a 9-hour drive. Mm-hmm. So being able to be that person that again has their back, so they don't have to worry about it, like, no matter what it is, they know that if I'm there and I'm saying we're ready to go and it's going to be okay, they can just focus on playing. And that was really fun to see them, like, get excited and just forget that they're playing a show and forget that someone is teching for them, because I've got it for them. That made me feel so validated as a technician, being able to walk in and be like, this is not ideal. And then as they're getting ready, I do what I have to do to make it okay. And by the time they walk out, I'm like, good to go. We're ready to rock. Like, come on, let's go. And they, like, some nights, like, not even knowing, like, what was wrong. Because when you're a performer, even just, like, that stress of having to deal with something, even if it gets fixed, that affects you, you know, and that drains your energy and that makes you feel nervous, you know, for your performance. And just, like, the least stress that you can have before you perform, the better, you know. So being that person that's like, I'm not stressed, you're not stressed, there's no stress, stress doesn't even exist because I dealt with it 45 minutes ago, was really nice. But yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Found out really good at, like, having naps during long drives. Loved it. Love napping. In Germany, you can have open liquor in the car, so I'd get a gas station beer, and that just blew my mind. Drinking a beer in a van on a highway? That was crazy. It was like, I am living in the lap of luxury. But yeah, just so amazing. It was just so amazing. Yeah, and I brought a little mascot with me. I've had this little, if you remember Beanie Babies.
Yes, I very much do.
Oh yeah, I had this one Beanie Baby. It's a red and yellow monkey. I named him Monkey, as you do when you're 7. And I've had Monkey since I was a little kid, and I brought Monkey on tour with me, which was really, really fun, because, I don't know, people just got a kick out of it. He always hung out on the mixer whenever I was mixing, and great for photo ops, and it was just nice to have a little, like, evil monkey on my shoulder, and when he'd be, like, whispering the evil thoughts, like, I won't say it on air, but the evil thoughts, I could just, like, put them in the bag and be like, okay, evil thoughts gone. So, yeah, tour, 10 out of 10, would do it again.
Hopefully you will soon.
Oh, please, yes, 100%, anyone.
If any of you weirdos want to do a tour, sounds like there's an open invite.
Yeah, hit me up.
All right, so we are coming close to the end of our time. Any last words, anything you want to say to people?
Man, just how, especially after the last couple years, I've always felt so invigorated by the scene here and the whole Pacific Northwest, and just every year that goes by, I'm just so grateful to be a part of everything that's happening here, and I'm really excited to see, like, what the next 10 years hold. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram, I guess, or you can find me at Redgate, or you can find me at Rain City. I also walk around town with my little dog. He's very friendly. His name is Chico. But yeah, you can find me, I guess, if you ever want to message me for anything, Blackout McLeod on Instagram.
All right, lovely. It's been absolutely wonderful having you on the show. So, you heard it out there, weirdos? The music scene is waiting for you, and you're going to find people in it that are your home. All right, we're going to sign off. See you next week. Thank you to all you beautiful weirdos out there in the wilds of the Pacific Northwest making noise, making you all of our problems. This wouldn't be the same without you. You can catch this episode as a podcast on CITR 109FM's website under the same name, and I'll be right back at you in a week. Same place, same time, so don't touch that dial. I've been your host, Coraline, and I am signing off for this week. Until next time, you are now exiting Pacific Noise Weird. Yeah.
This is John M. Bennett, and you are listening to CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Nost rum pale suit jeers d'accord.
Define.